Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for participating. Dr. Tudor, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you, please.
Thank you, sir. Welcome, everyone. We will go ahead and get the meeting called to order. I guess we'll go through introductions first. Who's going to call the roll today?
Mark Finks.
Tudor, I'll be glad to call the roll. This is Mark Finks. So
thank
let me start with, I'm going to call the roll of the committee members, and please speak up if I call your name to note that you're present. Mr. Rob Binky. Ms. Lisa Hartman.
Present.
Ms. Karina Sloat.
Here.
Ms. Jenny Howard. Dr. David Tudor.
Here.
Dr. Richard Cole. Dr. John Brophy.
No.
Dr. Gregory Kaiser.
Here.
Dr. Robert Snyder.
Here.
It's Dr. James Talmadge.
Here.
Dr. John Oglesby. Dr. Tim Jones.
Here.
Dr. Jeffrey Hazelwood.
Here.
Dr. Lisa Bellner.
Here.
Dr. Ceresia Cummings.
Here.
And Mr. Dan Hedrick. Does anybody hold proxies for any of the other members that didn't respond? Okay, I count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 out of 18, that's enough to establish a quorum, so we're free to proceed, Dr. Tudor.
Excellent. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, let me... Could whoever is on the telephone, 615-335-4188, identify themselves, please?
Sure, this is Tommy Castleberry with Concentra.
Okay. Emma Winters, could you identify your organization, please?
I'm with Butler Snow.
Okay. And Stephen Peters, could you identify your organization, please?
I'm with Enlight.
Okay. I think we recognize everyone else. So thank you, Dr. Tudor.
Hi, thank you, guys. Appreciate everyone joining in and participating today. So we have a quorum, so we will move on to approval of minutes from the last meeting on May 20th. Everyone should have received those in their packet and hopefully have had a chance to review those. They were a lengthy set of minutes, so I'm sure Dr. Brophy, comments, discussion, good?
Yes, it was fine.
Okay. Very good. All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any opposed? Very good. We will accept the minutes as written. Conflict of interest forms. New fiscal year, so new form, Lacey, we send the conflict of interest forms to Lacey, I believe, so we'll be sure and have everyone complete those forms.
She will pester you if you haven't.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, I promise.
I think it's a built-in part of our agenda now. All right. So any other preliminaries? If not, we'll move into old business, which I think we'll pick up our discussion on, our big discussion from last meeting with spine. Dr. Talmadge? Yes, sir. Dr. Talmadge.
Well, Emma is who is with the official disability
guidelines, or should we switch to Washington State or ACOM's guidelines? ACOM is used in California, New York, and I think Nevada. ODG is used in a majority of the states, and Washington State is its own system. They're the Canadian model of workers' compensation. So state government is the insurer, not private insurance companies. But Washington has published 2021 surgical guidelines for the back and neck, and they're not updated since then. ODG has published some guidelines prior to July of 2024, then new guidelines in July of 2024 that the committee did not like, revised guidelines in November of 2024, and revised again guidelines in April of 2025. ODG revised well over 100 items in July of 2025 that apparently did not change spine from April of 2025. So at least they have been stable for 5 months. But Dr. Brophy and I have looked at ODG's guidelines and Washington State's. I did not see ACOM's. Dr. Snyder got us access. Only ACOM sent the email, here's your way to get a password. Last week, Dr. Snyder and Dr. Oglesby were on vacation, and I didn't deal with the get a password since I was it. And the password link expired in 24 hours. So we haven't really seen ACOM. I like a lot about Washington. Their guidelines cover not only workers' compensation, but state Medicaid and the state medical insurance for all state employees. So the people who write the guidelines have to live with those same guidelines being applied to their case or their family member's case, because they're employees of the state of Washington. And Washington comes out and just flatly says, not covered. You can get it if you want it, but we won't pay for it. For lumbar disc replacement, sacroiliac joint fusion, lumbar fusion for back pain, or degenerative disc disease, discography, interspinous implants. Washington also says you have to, as a surgeon, have seen the patient at least once in the office. You can't have a mid-level commit the patient to surgery and the surgeon meet the patient in the pre-anesthesia area in the hospital. But Well, like a lot about Washington, we are familiar with ODG, and I'll let Dr. Brophy speak. He tells me he thinks he can live with ODG. So, Dr. Brophy.
Clinical standpoint with ODG is this requirement to wait 3 months with acute cervical lumbar radiculopathy. They sent us a copy of proposed changes to their guidelines, dropped it to 6 weeks, which is consistent with ACOM and with Washington State. They have other issues that we're hoping they're going to address, sort of out in the weeds kind of things about fusion for stenosis and second disc recurrence that won't bore you with. But the according to Dr. Snyder a few minutes ago, their proposals, went back and say, if you go on their website right now, they have not changed it from 3 months to 6 weeks. And that change was supposed to occur in early October. Propose that we see what they've actually decided on and then make a judgment at the next meeting in November.
You had some other issues. Do you want to just give me a list?
Sure. Under lumbar fusion, you talk about fusing an adjacent level with criteria, basically subjective back pain. That's not standard. They talk about fusion for lumbar stenosis. That's not standard. If it needs a fusion, that means something else going on. Instability, they should say that. They talk about fusion is not authorized for disc herniation or first recurrence, but they don't address second recurrence. And then the issue is for the lumbar fusion, 3 months of conservative management, and I think that's reasonable, but in the rare occurrence of a second recurrence, they frequently have incapacitating leg pain, and it all needs to get done, so that should be well under 3 months. And then they still have this physical therapy thing that, to me, is arbitrary number of treatments, the duration of treatments that make no sense. It should be determined by the patient's specific diagnosis, not a general term like they have in their guides, and how they are responding to treatment. It may need more than maybe less, depending on how they're doing.
Troy Prevost, do you want to speak up?
Yes, sir. I was waiting for everybody to finish. And to Dr. Brophy's last point, Dr. Brophy, I think they tried to address the PT concerns, and if they didn't, any language would be helpful for the editors to consider. And I think Dr. Snyder just documented that too. So, but to the duration, I think one of the things that we tried to, ODG's tried to do, the PT visit durations are really a guide. They're designed to be a guide for the adjusters to look at as they go, as they're following their claimant patients. There was language actually being put in that would allow functional improvement to guide physical therapy. Now, if that didn't fit the way you think it needs to fit, I would absolutely want feedback on that to get back to them. But I think that if y'all reviewed the October 3rd changes that are coming up, y'all through Dr. Snyder, it sounds like you've had opportunities to review those. There isn't at this point. I had sent those a month ago. But at this point, it'll be hard to make changes this round from feedback. But we could definitely put them, get a look at considering, because we try to update content in certain guidelines at least 3 times a year, which is a requirement that some states have required at least within every year to 2 years. So we try to do that. So we can, in any input you get, we give on these, I can absolutely put them into the next cycle, which would be a January cycle, probably. I'm just going to be straight honest with you. It's hard to make interim changes unless it's something very small. But, I'll let them stand on their own where they are on those. That was in that was a lot of input back to the ODG editors on those information, and some went back to the drawing board with the librarians on looking at evidence and you know, considering specifically Tennessee's concerns. So, you know, I'll leave it at that.
Roy, this is Jim Talmadge.
Yes, sir.
If you're making a list, many of the back surgery sections have a requirement for a psychologic evaluation,
yes,
which
sir.
Is logical. But if you look at what is actually required, it's assess motivation for recovery and return to work, not that it be favorable, just that it be assessed. So you could assess that it's terrible, but still recommend the patient for surgery. Then is assess any uncontrolled mental health or substance use disorder. Again, you could document that it's present and a bad prognostic sign, but as long as you assess it, you have complied with the criterion. And then the third is evaluate personality style and coping ability. Undefined are what is personality style and what is coping ability. So we can get in arguments about what those words mean, but they're undefined. And then buried in the text, not up in the criteria, but buried in the text, it says part of the psychological evaluation should be standardized, well-known psychologic tests, at least two of which have built-in symptom validity checks. So there are people who lie. There are people who lie to their doctor or therapist, and they usually fail symptom validity testing in psychologic tests, well-constructed psychometric, well-known instruments. But that criterion is buried in the text and not up in one of the bullet points where it really should be.
Okay.
And then the criterion is 6 months of CBT, which has been documented, that's cognitive behavioral therapy, has been well documented to be effective for chronic pain or psychotherapy. It's well documented that supportive psychotherapy doesn't help these people. And yet with the or in there, 6 months of seeing a psychiatrist or psychologist for, oh, poor John, it's bad, isn't it? That sort of supportive therapy that we see not uncommonly in records, meets the criterion. So the criteria listed in multiple surgical sections for a psychological evaluation need to be re-looked at.
Yes, sir. I will make sure that happens. And I can't argue those points with you at all. I've got those notes down and
so, Dr. Brophy, do you have your folks go through psychological evaluation before you fuse them?
I do not. We do that for dorsal stimulators, but not for fusion.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say I've had quite a few workers' compensation spinal surgeries that I think probably would have benefited from that, but I haven't seen it happen. So I guess one of my concerns with spine surgery is that do our guidelines protect our patients? And here's what I mean. it gets harder and harder to find neurosurgeons. I'm in Knoxville, and we have to send our folks sometimes to Jackson, to Chattanooga, to Nashville, to Tri-Cities, and they end up with a lot of surgeons I don't know. And sometimes I just had a surgeon in Chattanooga do a multi-level thoracic fusion. It was a case you and I looked at, and this guy's a lot worse now, but he wasn't going to stop until he got a surgery, but I don't think that should have been.
Hopefully it was denied by the adjuster based on the OGG requirements.
No, he had it done.
That goes back to the adjuster that should have got a second opinion.
Yeah. And I asked the adjuster to get a second opinion, and they just wanted to push the case through. I mean, they were, frankly, they were tired of dealing with the guy, and they just, okay, you want it? Be careful what you ask for. You're going to get it. And he did. And so he's a 49-year-old fellow who's going to end up on full permanent total disability, is my guess. Of course, it's still playing out. But with that answer, so you feel like OGG will protect, as long as the rules are applied, they will protect us from the surgeons who maybe are a little too aggressive?
Yes, and in fact, it's the supplemental spine guidelines that we agreed to 10 years ago, is the biggest problem I see is the patient that comes in with degenerative changes, and they do a fusion, and they do poorly, and it never should have been approved because it's all pre-existing. The state of Tennessee is not required to be covered. And that's what we tell the adjusters when they ask for a discussion about the criteria. But many don't know or have not had bad experience enough to make an impression.
Yeah.
But the whole cost of the whole thing could have been avoided with the good decision up front.
Well, I think it's a very valid question is, do the guidelines protect the patients? And do they provide the patients with appropriate treatment? And I think that's what we're trying to get ODG to do in the long run, is to do both of those things. Make sure that what's approved is appropriate. Make sure that it protects them against any appropriate things. So you can take that back, Troy, as well.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Okay. I think the idea, the guidelines are supposed to do both of those. And, I think you heard there are some gamesmanship outside of guidelines on the part of carriers and in maybe providers too, depending on specifically the psyche valves. I've seen the plaintiff bar do a lot of doctor shopping on that end to get the kind of psych result they need. So that can be problematic. So yeah, I think we're trying to do both of those things. Show what's appropriate and prevent what's not. So yeah, I will take that back. Yes, sir.
So we need to take an action on this. Do we have a motion for what that action would be?
A motion that we delay action until we can read the final copy of ODG that comes out 3 October and discuss it at the November meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Who was the second?
Jim okay. Talmadge seconds.
Okay.
Any opposed? So we will delay that vote until the next meeting. Any other discussion there? Good. Okay.
I have one other thing I want to add.
Okay.
So I sent to ODG a very good article on cryotherapy, cryocompression therapy in shoulder and knee surgery. Troy, it is my understanding that they are going to make that change in October as well. And yes, I commend ODG for that. That's going to limit a lot of, that must be 6 or 8, appeals that we see a month is for the denial of the cryotherapy. So hopefully that change is going to make a big difference.
I sent you the draft, Dr. Snyder. If you didn't get to see it, I can see it again.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, I got it. Did get it. That's why I'm noting that.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
No problem. Thank you for the article. Those are the kind of things we love to get is good literature like that, that we can grade it at a, at that level. So.
Is that using the cryo chamber?
No, cryopneumatic.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, cold compression device.
Yeah.
Different names for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can always make things more difficult by labeling them differently.
It's like a bag of ice.
Yeah.
It always worked, you know, back in the with the good old ice bath. You know? All right. We'll move on to a simpler topic, I think, drug formulary with the July update. I think that was in our packet also.
So that's another, I don't know, 15-page document of changes they made, of which very few of them were substantial. Most of them were topic changes. I highlighted the ones on top, which is the first 7, which had to do with recommendation and conditional recommendation for mental health and pain management for psychoactive drugs. So if you have any comments on those, please send them to me and I will forward them to ODG. And the next update is due in October, and I have that and will publish that hopefully within the next week. And so it will become effective then 1st of October.
Dr. Snyder, can I add a comment to that? If everybody pay attention, ibuprofen 300 has been addressed in the new formulary because we had several requests on a new NDC and not a real cost effective drug in a 300 milligram form. So if anybody, just so you know, that is one of the highlights of the update coming in October. Pay attention to that, and any feedback would be helpful. We're already getting some feedback on some of it. So,
well, we in the past we've had trouble with Flexeril putting an NDC number on a 7.5 milligram tablet when the standard have been 5 and 10. So it's just another way to try to, save some money on the amount of drug you put in.
Any other discussion regarding the medication changes, in particular the highlighted few? If not, we're ready to move to a motion for the formulary. Do we have a motion to accept the changes?
Rick Cole.
Okay.
Good deal. So we got a first and a second. Any opposed? No? All right. We will accept the formulary changes as written. Moving on, next order of business. AMA guides to the sixth edition. Any updates there?
The digital version has been published and supposedly finalized. The people that would be involved in evaluating that have been busy with ODG. So at this point in time, we have no update on that one. It'll be an agenda item again in November.
So no recs at this time.
Dr. Snyder, this is Troy. Can I make a comment real quick on that?
Yes.
ODG will sometime before the end of the year, we'll be able to deliver the digital guidelines through the web version of ODG. If somebody is a subscriber, they can actually they'll be able to access it through the web. We've got an agreement with AMA to deliver those. So that'll be available in the ODG on the ODG website.
Congratulations. That's great.
It's been a long process, but we're getting close. I just wanted to give that ahead of time in case anybody needed.
Finalize that. Would you let me know? Because I can notify the committee.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. You'll be the first to know.
So we'll be able to access the AMA guides through ODG without subscribing to the AMA guides? Just
correct.
ODG.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
The sixth edition digital.
It'll be part of your ODG subscription. Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? If not, we'll move on to the legislative update. Amanda, do you have that for us today?
I do. Thank you so much. Just few quick notes. We will have legislation coming up next year. We're sworn to secrecy by the governor's office until after January, so I'll discuss those into next year when we get there. The things that I think you're probably most interested in are the medical fee schedule, which is at the Attorney General's office. I have requested an update from them and was just sent back some information. So I'll continue working on that till we get that to their liking. And hopefully it will wrap up quickly and soon. Claims handling and case management rules. We will be headed to GovOps on October the 15th. So we are on our way there as well. And that's it for the legislative update.
So the changes in the fee schedule have to do with increasing the fees paid to physicians in three categories to meet inflation. That's the biggest change. The case management, the biggest change in the case management is going to be the ability to use virtual communications such as secure audio video for some face-to-face meetings. And the claims handling standards, the biggest change in that is identifying contact individuals at the insurance companies and at the carriers and at the employers, requiring them to update that every 6 months. So that if there's a problem with a adjuster or if there's a problem with a claim, that we will have not only the adjuster's information, but also contact information with the carriers.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks, Ms. Terry. Appreciate that. Medical fee schedule. So I guess that we've covered that. Any other discussion around the fee schedule?
It's published on the Secretary of State's website. There you can see what has gone to the Attorney General's office.
So we'll move on to utilization review report and the fiscal year stats.
So the first one, I included the utilization review organization annual reports, and we compiled those. We were very successful in getting, I believe it was 34 out of 37 organizations to respond with accurate information concerning utilization review. The numbers are pretty stable. That is, between 11 and 15,000 utilization reviews are done on Tennessee patients, Tennessee injured workers every year. And the breakdown in that data also is by the utilization review physicians. And we have separated them so that physicians that have had over 20 utilization reviews in the state then are broken into a separate worksheet so that you can see the numbers. Some are pretty big. We've got three physicians that are, I think, in the area of 200 reviews that they do. So, and it also lists the number of companies that each one of those physicians works for. And there are some physicians that are doing work for up to 13 companies. So, it's very interesting. So I'll give that to you. I think it's valuable information, to evaluate what utilization review is occurring in the state.
I think the report said Dr. Alpert was the number one.
Yes.
So she, how many did she do?
As I recall, it was 380. Don't quote me on that number. I haven't looked at it in a couple weeks. So, and that's just for Tennessee.
Yeah.
So.
If I recall, I think she's based in New York. Is she?
Well, we just got there's three of the physicians that actually work under the label of Gotham Orthopedics.
Yeah, okay. That's okay. That's her.
But they've got, according to their website, they've got six or seven different addresses in New Jersey and New York.
Yeah.
So, it's what it is.
Yeah. Well, good for them. Hopefully that's good for us. All right. Any discussion around UR review or the report itself? Move on to penalties.
We've got the second one was the fiscal year stats for our utilization review.
Oh, okay.
So I am very proud of our staff. There were a couple months in this fiscal year where we were able to send out every appeal determination the same day that we could legally send it out. So essentially what happens then, once an appeal is filed, there's a minimum of 5 days to let the adjusters either reconsider or let the appeal go through. So we were sending reports out. There were 2 months in that fiscal year where we sent the reports out on that fifth day. So congratulations to my staff, to the Dr. Oglesby and to Dr. Talmadge for their hard work. That's a high bar to keep managing every day, every thing, especially if I take vacation, for those poor guys suffer. But I'm very proud of that report. So, interestingly enough, if you compare our statistics with California's IMR process, they're within 30 days on average of issuing their reports. I think that we're doing very well. The other thing is that the IMR process in California upholds the denials 90% of the time. our statistics are more like 40% of the time. So I believe that we are protecting the patients a little bit more through a less administrative process. So I'm very proud of those numbers. In this last period since our last meeting, there have been 9 referrals to penalty. Of them, 2 of those were peer violations. In other words, they were not same or similar specialty or were Tennessee licensed. 5 of them were for records violations. I'm not very happy when I get 750 pages of records with duplicates. So that goes to penalty. And then there were 2 penalty referrals for where the peer-to-peer contact was not carried through by the reviewing person. So those were the 9 that we referred.
So on that last category, was that when the treating provider attempted to contact them back, but they didn't communicate
correct
back to them? Or okay,
the number was either not answered or not answered in time or sent to voicemail.
Okay,
so those are, I would like to see more of those because I think a lot of those occur, but it's difficult to get the documentation. That's the biggest thing, is documenting when the first call was made, when the second call was made. So when we get enough documentation, we send it on.
So should we be documenting that in our appeal? Because I've not been doing that, and we do come into that a lot.
Yes. If you can document that you made a certain call at a certain time, and that you received a voicemail or you did not get a contact, please send that to us.
Okay, thank you.
So if that part of the evaluation isn't met, is that a reason that you would overturn that denial?
No. We look only at the medical evidence. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of times we will see a denial because that's what usually happens if you don't make the peer correct. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's a denial, but we look at the medical facts. We don't take that into consideration.
Okay. Any other comments, discussions, or questions about those topics? If not, we will move on to new business, the WCIR reports.
So I have 4 reports I'm going to summarize. And if anybody wants a copy of those reports, please email me. The first one was hospital outpatient payments. Tennessee, for their outpatient payments, ranked well below the median state, and they pay about 62% of Medicare. The range for most states is about 110% of Medicare, but the growth rate in outpatient payments is between 10 and 40%, and Tennessee has one of the lowest increases for all the states. The second report is on advanced practitioners in workers' compensation claims and how they affect outcomes. So advanced practitioners make up, according to WCRI, on average 30% of all initial non-ER appointments. And it's higher than 37% for specialists. They do provide quicker availability and they shorten the time for first diagnostics and first treatments. They have slightly higher medical costs, but interestingly enough, lower indemnity payments. And they have slightly longer out of work or restricted duty than physicians, but ultimately the claims outcomes are very close to the same. So I thought that those were interesting. For medical fee schedules, Tennessee is approximately 50% above Medicare, which is slightly less than most states. And this was based on 2023 data, so it would not be for what we're doing now. Interestingly enough, emergency room visits and radiology services are higher in Tennessee than on average the rest of the states. But E&M services and EMG services are significantly below at 62%. Physical therapy and physical medicine is about 25% above the median state. And surgery comes in at about 100% above the median state because we have that, multiplier for orthopedics and neurosurgery. Then inflation report from 20 to 25. How did it affect workers' compensation? So in spite of attempts to increase the physician and provider reimbursements, Tennessee providers have cumulatively lost 2% over that period of time from 20 to 25 per year, in at the same time that medical inflation went up 13%. So physicians are essentially 11% down over the course of those 5 years. Tennessee ranks on the lowest side for increased rates of payments over that period of time, in spite of all we've tried to do to increase them. So hopefully this new fee schedule will hope to address as many of those issues as we can.
Is there an explanation over the hospital outpatient payments?
There was no explanation as to why it occurred, but yeah. It's just that we were significantly below.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that we're 50% above Medicare.
Yeah.
But that's less than other states.
It's interesting.
We aren't the lowest. The lowest was 20% over Medicare.
Wow.
Which is I don't remember. If you want the report, I'll send it to you. You can go through all the graphs.
I think they've done several reports now on advanced practitioners in workers' comp, and I think they've all come out that the cost is not significantly different in those.
And outcomes.
Are
very similar, if not the same. So it may be that the fact that they can get quicker treatment makes up for some errors in over-treatment, maybe, if that's a word you want to use.
Yeah. But
I think that it, appropriate and earlier treatment should affect the outcomes.
Yes. You think the indemnity payments are lower because they're nicer to the patient than Dr. Murphy is?
Well, it's interesting that there's slightly longer period of out of work and restricted duty. But you would think that would affect the indemnity payments. But it just may be that the quicker treatment that they get to begin with makes up for that little bit longer period of restricted duty or out of work than the delay seeing a physician.
Interesting. Well, I think, and seriously, I bet yours are the same. I mean, probably 75-80% of the injuries I see are just very minor musculoskeletal things. I think most of them, if they didn't occur at work, they wouldn't have even, they wouldn't have seen a provider at all. So I wonder if a lot of the advanced practitioners are actually getting, they're getting that selected group of more minor conditions, perhaps easier to treat conditions, and then, which leaves the more complex cases going to the physicians.
Well, interestingly,
just very cold. Dr. Kalman, that's a real astute observation, but there's also some data out there that shows that patients that are waiting for a physician encounter can develop inappropriate behaviors that complicate their process, and that earlier evaluation by a provider getting them on the right track seems to have a lower overall outcome as far as cost. There's some nice data published on that.
Yeah. That, yes, I would totally agree. Yeah. All right. Well, any other questions, discussions over those? Those are always interesting studies to or reports to peruse through. Wow. Any other new business or?
Well, we do have one announcement.
Okay.
The National Work Comp Meeting, which is a fairly large organization, is going to be at the Music City Center here in Nashville on November 11th and 12th. It'd be good to look that up and see what their program is. It's a national organization that usually meets in Las Vegas. So now it's the meeting in Nash Vegas.
Says November of this year?
November of this year, November 11th and 12th.
Okay. And what's the name of that group again?
National Work Comp.
Thanks, sir.
Are they an entity unto themselves or an organization unto themselves?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's good information. I guess otherwise, our next meeting will be Tuesday, November 4th. And then looking toward next year, February 10th of 26. So
please put it on your calendars.
Yeah. Any other announcements, discussion? Just doesn't seem right. It's not even 2 o'clock yet.
There's a lot of information. And I appreciate everybody's attention. I appreciate the work that the committee does in going through these things and your attention and your input. So please let me know what I can do to help you.
No, thank you. Thank you. The information that you and Dr. Talmadge and everyone brings to the meetings is very, very helpful, useful, beneficial. Yeah, thank you, guys.
We can't let this meeting be over. We can't let this meeting end without somebody making a comment about Dr. Snyder's beard. He came back from vacation with a very nice beard, which I like a lot, and he kind of let it come in while he was out in the wilderness. So hopefully everybody appreciates that. You can give him a thumbs up if you like it.
That's an impressive for 1 week growth.
No,
very impressive.
Very distinguished.
It's 3 weeks now.
Oh, 3 weeks. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, that was a vacation. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't gone that long.
Oh, okay.
I've been back for 10 days. So, no,
Tell me, in here today. So,
Dr. Talmadge would have assassinated me if I had stayed away.
Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll see you in November.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.